Mental health seems to affect millions of people, and for some reason it's a stigmatized conversation to have. I'm hoping that the next series will kind of bring about more mental health awareness, as well as stroke recovery awareness, because I don't believe people understand how many people are having strokes. And it's not just older people, I'm talking, you know, 40s and younger. I mean, I'm 46 and I recently had a stroke. So come with me on this probably emotional journey, and hopefully we can all get through this together.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning into another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your host, Mandy, and today I'm doing part three of my stroke journey. And this is going to be more clinical information because I think it's very important that people understand kind of what strokes are, what they do to people, and more importantly, how to recognize the sign of somebody having a stroke, because time is of the essence when it comes to this thing. So for me, I had an ischemic stroke, which is the most common one. And excuse me, there were signs, but I don't know, I guess I just didn't think that being 46 years old that I would be having a stroke. So I didn't really pay attention to it, which is not a good thing. Honestly, it's a miracle that I'm still here, because I waited a week before I went into the hospital after my symptoms started, which not a good idea, because like the rule is like the golden hour. It's like the time of onset of your symptoms, getting to the hospital within an hour so that they can diagnose it and get you into like CT scans and things like that quickly. But there is, as far as knowing what the signs are, it's a new, like when I went to paramedic school, we learned the Cincinnati Stroke Scale. So that's kind of always been in the back of my mind as far as what I know. But now they do stuff that's called BFAST. And actually they just added the B. Like, so for the last while, it's just been fast. But now it's BFAST, and the B stands for balance. So basically, you're looking for different kinds of balance problems, loss of coordination, that type of thing. And the E is eye and vision issues. So sometimes your eyes can get blurred and things like that. F is for facial drooping, which for me, I couldn't get into the bathroom, so I couldn't see that the left side of my face had facial droop on it. So yeah. The A is for arm numbness or weakness. And really, it's when it comes to strokes, the arm numbness or weakness is usually going to be primarily just on one side of the body, because typically when a stroke hits, it's either the right side of the brain or the left side of the brain. And the left side of the brain controls the right side of your body, whereas the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body. For me, I had a right side brain stroke, so the left side of my body is weak. My left leg is still kind of weak. My left arm stopped working for the time being, which sucks, but you know, you adapt and move on. So the S in BFAST stands for slurred speech. And I mean, I wasn't really talking out loud or anything, but I saw a video of me the other day of like, I was probably a day or two past being admitted into the hospital. And I mean, I could definitely hear the speech problems that I had to begin with. I mean, it wasn't terrible, but you know, I could hear, and you know, definitely saw the facial droop too. It's kind of crazy. Now the T starts for time to call 911. Again, very important. The first hour from the stroke onset, like I said before, is defined as the golden hour, in which the treatment has the highest efficacy and lowest side effects. So by me waiting a week, I probably caused a lot more brain damage than could have, you know, than what could have been if I'd just gone in when at the first onset of my symptoms, which was stupid on my part. But again, being 46, I didn't really, you know, think, hey, oh, you're having a stroke, you might want to go to the emergency room. It just didn't, even with my medic training, it just didn't dawn on me. So that's, you know, so now I'm dealing with the cognitive deficits and things like that, which, oh, goodness, suck too. And fatigue is awful, because like your energy is just drained. Like I'm drained all the time. So common stroke symptoms are sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm or leg, especially on one side of the body. Sudden confusion, trouble speaking or understanding speech. Sudden trouble seeing in one or both eyes. Sudden trouble walking, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination. Sudden severe headache with no known cause. Now, just because you have a severe headache doesn't mean you're having a stroke, because other things can affect and cause headaches, like stress can cause headaches. high blood pressure can cause headaches. if you're diabetic like I am, that can cause, you know, your blood sugar gets too high and cause headaches too. So just because you have a sudden headache for no known reason doesn't mean you're having a stroke. Just pay attention to other possible factors when it comes to that. Now, less common symptoms are sudden nausea or vomiting not caused by a viral illness, brief loss or change of consciousness such as fainting, confusion, seizures, or coma. Now, as far as diagnosing a stroke, basically what they do is they do a CT angiography, which combines CT and a special dye to examine blood vessels and detect abnormalities in the brain. CT perfusion scan, which uses dye and a series of CT images to determine blood flow to a region of the brain, which I had both of those. MRIs, which can detect changes in brain tissue and damage to brain cells from a stroke. Had that too. Then the CT arteriogram, CTA, and magnet and MRI, which show the large blood vessels in the brain and may give us more information about the site of a blood clot and the flow of blood through your brain. Cerebral angiography, which is a test that uses dye, and special x-rays to show the insides of blood vessels in the neck and head, which tests to verify a stroke event will be performed in a matter of minutes to determine the best course of treatment to stop whatever is causing the stroke, stabilize the symptoms, and begin the road to recovery. So again, time is of the essence. It's very important. And by the way, all of my info is coming from Ohio State University. One of their websites on strokes is very, very informative. Now, there are different kinds of strokes. Like I said, I had an ischemic stroke. But one that's particularly kind of scary is called a silent stroke. And sometimes people have strokes without realizing it. They're called silent strokes. Either the stroke causes no noticeable symptoms or you don't remember them. But they can still cause permanent damage to your brain. And if you've had more than one silent stroke, you may experience thinking and memory problems. You could be at a greater risk for having another more serious stroke. Now, the only way to know if you've had a silent stroke is with a brain scan. A study of adults with no apparent stroke history found that 10% had stroke damage. You should talk to your doctor if you have memory issues or think you may have had a silent stroke. You know what? And even if you're not sure you've had a stroke or you might have had a stroke or might be having one, go to the hospital anyways. It's better to be safe than sorry. Now, ischemic strokes, which are the most common, which is what I had, occurs when a blood vessel that supplies the brain becomes blocked by a blood clot or other particle impairing blood flow. Fatty deposits called plaque can also cause blockages by building up in the blood vessels. With no oxygen and nutrients going to that part of the brain, cells and tissue there begin to die, which can cause you to slur your speech or lose vision or balance, experience arm numbness or facial drooping. And again, I had my stroke on the right side of my brain, and it apparently really damaged my corona radiata. I think that's how you pronounce it, which from what I've read is like kind of controls your emotions, helps regulate them. So my emotions are kind of all over the place, which really sucks. People who have increased risk for ischemic strokes have carotid artery disease and Moyamoya disease, which is what I was diagnosed with, which is a chronic and progressive narrowing of the blood vessels in the arteries in the brain. The condition can lead to ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes as well as seizures and other neurological issues. And the weird thing about Moyamoya is that it's typically like found in people of Asian descent, so I'm not sure how in the world I got that, but yeah. Other health conditions that increase your risk for ischemic stroke are irregular heart rhythms like AFib or atrial fibrillation, which you're 5 times more likely to have a stroke if you have this condition. High blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, smoking, obesity, being over 55. And another type of stroke is a hemorrhagic stroke. And hemorrhagic strokes occur when a blood vessel that supplies the brain ruptures or leaks, bleeding into the brain and blocking it from getting the oxygen and nutrients it needs. Also, pressure and swelling can build up in this tissue, causing even further damage. Now, there are two kinds of hemorrhagic strokes. Intracerebral hemorrhage, which happens when blood vessels in the brain bleed. Intracerebral hemorrhages are usually caused by high blood pressure and can come on suddenly. A subarachnoid hemorrhage, when the bleeding occurs in the space between the brain and the membranes that cover the brain. An example of subarachnoid hemorrhage is a ruptured aneurysm or a weakened ballooned area on the artery wall. Causes, again, are uncontrolled high blood pressure, aneurysm, trauma like a car accident or something like that. Arteriovenous malformation, which is a congenital disorder. Overuse of blood thinners, or again, Moyamoya disease. Stupid Moyamoya. And then there's also trans ischemic attacks, or Tia's. They're also known as mini strokes. These attacks are caused by a temporary blockage of blood flow to the brain. They can signal that a full-blown stroke might happen in the future, so symptoms should not be ignored. And with a Tia, you can have the same things that are a normal, or like an ischemic, I don't want to say normal, because there's nothing normal about this, but the same kind of symptoms that like you would have if you had ischemic strokes. But the thing is that they usually correct themselves within 24 hours, so the effects typically are not lasting. Now, there's also a brainstem stroke. This is a stroke that occurs in the brainstem, which controls all basic activities of the central nervous system. A cryptogenic stroke. Well, this is a stroke without a known cause. So, yeah, that'd be bad. Not know what the hell happened. Now, as far as treatment. Treating ischemic strokes. A clot-busting medication called TPA can treat most ischemic strokes if it's given within 4.5 hours of when symptoms began. This is why it's so important to seek treatment as soon as symptoms begin and at the time when your symptoms start. The sooner this is done, the better chance for positive outcomes. If you aren't able to use medications and the blockage is in one of the main blood vessels of your brain, neurosurgeons can perform either or both of the following procedures. A thrombectomy, in which they insert a catheter in your groin and thread it to the area of the clot. The catheter is equipped with either a suction device or a mechanical device to remove the blood clot from your artery. I wasn't able to get this because the blood clot was so large in my brain that they said that if they had removed it, it would just cause my brain to bleed, so couldn't get that done. And then there's also intra-arterial thrombolysis, in which a catheter is inserted and threaded to tiny arteries in your brain, and they can inject medicine through the catheter to dissolve the blood clot. I don't know why this wasn't done. I guess, again, because if they got rid of the blood clot, there was a significant portion of my brain that would be affected as far as, like, causing potential bleeds. And apparently, I guess, the clot had been there so long that the blood vessels and everything had already started to reroute around it, so my brain had started to kind of fix itself, even though it was damaged and still is damaged. Then treatment for a hemorrhagic stroke. Basically, the main goal for a hemorrhagic stroke is to stop the bleeding into the brain, whether through medications or surgery, and to control your blood pressure. In some instances, stroke can be treated with medications alone. The neurocritical care unit team has expertise to manage with medicine, subtle changes in blood pressure and swelling in the brain controlling the stroke. If you don't need further treatment, such as surgery, neurosurgeons can perform a number of life-saving procedures, both minimally invasive radiological interventions and traditional surgeries. I actually had to have brain surgery, which I'll talk to you a little bit more about here shortly. Surgical options for hemorrhagic stroke will also depend on what type you're having, whether a subarachnoid hemorrhoid caused by aneurysm rupture or an intracerebral hemorrhage caused by a ruptured blood vessel. Surgeries for hemorrhagic and strokes. Sorry, I can't talk today. Hemorrhagic strokes include, by the way, that's another fun side effect, is you can even just talking, like continuous talking, is tiring. And you can hear it in my voice. My voice starts to get kind of hoarse and weak. And then I also kind of start to stutter a little bit. So it's kind of sucks. And also, I have a tendency to talk really fast. And when I do, apparently, it's harder to understand me. So I have to constantly keep reminding myself to slow my speech down so people understand what the hell I'm saying. So surgeries are aneurysm embolization, which is a minimally invasive procedure. Neurosurgeons insert a tube or a catheter into an artery in the groin. The surgeon threads the tube to the site of the aneurysm and can fill the aneurysm with tiny coils, a web device, or pipeline stent device. So basically what these devices do is they block blood from entering the aneurysm. Actually, OSU was the first to offer this procedure to patients, so go OSU. Now there's also aneurysm clipping. Neurosurgeons can clip the aneurysm, a balloon-like bulge in the artery, to block it off from blood vessels in the brain to prevent further leaking. Arteriovenous malformation repair. Surgeons can open the skull to stop bleeding and to drain off extra spinal fluid that could cause the brain to swell. Other treatment, I had an angiograph done where Dr. Booz, my neurosurgeon, inserted a catheter into my groin area and threaded up to like where my carotids and stuff are so he could see, get a better look at the blood vessels in my brain, which is kind of weird, but he was able to do it. So that's how he determined that I had Moyamoy disease. I also had a right RCA to MCA bypass. So basically the entire right side of my brain was getting zero oxygen and zero nutrients and no blood flow at all. So he had to reroute an artery in my brain to get that blood flow going again. It's a complicated procedure, but apparently he's like one of the best at it. So I felt very fortunate to have him doing it. And my results were good. And actually, I have some. I've actually got some pictures of the surgery. I asked him to take pictures while he was operating. And his nurse did that for me, so it's pretty cool. So this is a picture of, I don't know what that blue thing is. That maybe just be to help keep the artery kind of in place so he can move it around. This is him basically moving the artery. Like from, I think this is the clip where they had to clip off one of the blood vessels and stop the blood flow for a brief time. So he's physically moving the artery to where it needs to be so that I can get the blood flow back to my brain again. And then this is the new artery. So you can see it's nice and thick, and it's supplying a good amount of blood back up to my brain, so it's a good thing. This is kind of basically the same picture, but the thing I wanted to show on this is it's cool because like they have to, obviously they sew one vessel to the other to complete the flow of blood. And these stitches are as thick as a human hair. So, I mean, you have to have like a crazy amount of steady hands to be able to do this. I mean, I can't even imagine trying to thread these real tiny, because, you know, I mean, this is the main blood vessel artery, and it's, you know, kind of, it looks like it's paper thin too. So to be able to stitch one artery to the other with these teeny tiny stitches is incredible to me. And this is another shot of the artery with the blood flowing through it, which looks great as far as I can tell. And then this is, I believe this is the artery that he severed so that he can put another one attached to it to get that blood flow going back up there again. Sounds dry. And like you can see the hole cut in the membrane of my brain to get to this artery. It's kind of, I mean, I guess if you get grossed out by stuff like this, it's probably not that great to look at. But for me, it's interesting because it's like, that's really cool. This is my scalp. Well, this is my scalp peeled back. This is my skull because he had to cut a little hole in my skull to get to the part of the brain that he needed to operate on, which I can still feel, by the way. Like you can feel the indents of or like where he put the skull cap back on and everything. So that's kind of creepy. Now, as far as like my scans and stuff, I have no idea what this is other than, I mean, I know it's my skull, but like these dots, these like little dark areas, I'm not sure what that signifies. I need to ask my doctor about that. And then this one, I'm not sure what this means either. He's got like a green line drawn. I don't know if it's like following what like where my carotid arteries go, because it's kind of, because like you can see my artery on this one right here. It's like a dark green. So I'm assuming this is where he's drawing a line to where my carotid artery is, making sure, I guess, the blood flow is where it's supposed to be. But I mean, the right side of my brain, I mean, it may just be like just a skin or whatever, but I mean, it looks smaller than the left side, which I mean, could just be optical illusion of sorts. This last picture, here's the blood clot. The white stuff around it is a cerebrospinal fluid. And like all these little dots apparently are like what they call the infarcts. So that's a pretty good sized blood clot. So yeah, I hope you guys weren't eating if you're watching that, because it's kind of gross, but yeah, it's interesting all the same to me anyways, because it's my brain, so, you know, I found it fascinating. But that's just me. But again, the whole purpose of this podcast today was to kind of help people understand what to look for if you think somebody might be having a stroke. Remember, it's be fast. Balance eyes, facial droop, arms. Shit, no, I forgot what it was. Hold on. It's another fun thing about strokes. Your memory sucks. Yeah, A is for arms and speech. T is for time to call 911. Remember, the golden hour is very important, because that's the quicker they can diagnose it, the quicker they can start treating it, and then hopefully the less deficits you have from it, you know, because once those the cells and the tissue in your brain die, that's it. They're gone for life. It's a permanent condition. So, you know, I don't, as far as my condition goes, I'm currently in speech therapy, and my speech therapist is awesome. Even though she gives me math, which I think I told her to do anyway this time around. So that's my bad. That's on me, I guess. But she's helped me, like, with my concentration and focus and things like that, because my focus is, like, all over the place. Even my PT is, like, I had to do, like, an ocular test with my PT just to make sure my eyesight was okay, because right now, if there's a busy pattern on the floor, or if there's, you know, people even just walking around me while I'm walking, I get not really dizzy, like the room's not spinning or anything, but it's kind of like a vertigo type feeling. It's just, it gets very disorienting, I guess, is the best way to describe it. But I think the hardest thing for me with this stroke is just, you know, my brain isn't able to process things the way it used to. So sometimes when you talk to me, I may be silent after you say something, just because I'm trying to wrap my head around what you just said. It's not always easy, and like things that were obvious to me before are no longer obvious to me now. So, I mean, here's like a perfect example. Yesterday or the day before, whenever it was, my mom has like this air fryer / conventional oven that we use quite a bit, and she doesn't like a whole bunch of mess. So she told me to put a paper towel on like the drip tray, but she didn't fully explain it because she didn't realize she needed to. And I did ask questions because it didn't dawn on me at the time, but I put the paper towel in the drip tray. So I wouldn't make a mess, because I was making French bread pizzas yesterday, and, you know, paper towels, paper, putting it into a very hot oven. Fortunately, we came out, mom tried to get the paper out, but it touched the, like, the heating coils and caught on fire. So that's stuff that, like, you think would be obvious not to put paper in a, you know, toaster oven, but I had misunderstood what she was talking about. So that was, could have been a disaster. It was not, like, nothing happened. Like, we were able, her mom was able to get the paper out quickly and put it into the sink and, you know, get the fire squashed. So it was, you know, no big deal, but it could have been a really bad situation. And had I been alone, I mean, I'm not one to usually panic, so I think as far as if that had happened while I was alone, it caught on fire inside the conventional oven, I probably just would have grabbed some water and thrown it in there and, you know, extinguished it or whatnot. But fortunately, I didn't have to. So, but yeah, it's just, it's a very difficult thing. And of course, I'm unable to walk normally. Like, I may have kind of a limp, I guess. I don't, because like my left leg is weaker and my brain doesn't want to make my knee bend, so it causes me to walk kind of funny, and which is causing all kinds of problems because my body's overcompensating to correct it. And so now kind of my hips bother me a lot, and my left knee is really getting messed up. So that's why I go to PT twice a week to help me gain strength and hopefully get my brain to kick back in. And I'm actually next week, I'll be starting occupational therapy again, because I really want to work on my vision. Sounds right. And seeing if I can get it to where just a crowded or a busy background or whatnot doesn't affect me the way it does, because I'm actually on July 10th taking a driving test with occupational therapy at my neuro rehab and balance center, so that I can be cleared to be able to drive and know that I can drive safely, because not being able to drive sucks. But I'm going through the appropriate channels to get everything taken care of so that I know that I can do it safely. And as far as working, I'm on long-term disability right now, because I get the job I currently have. I can't do it. because it deals with Excel spreadsheets and, you know, data input. But I have to be very cognizant of what I'm inputting because, I mean, it's patients' payments and things like that. And my brain doesn't always like, you know, because I know how I was working beforehand. See, I was talking about my voice starts to go out after a while. So, but I mean, working beforehand, it was pretty easy and I had no trouble with it for the most part. And, you know, now it's very difficult for me to even concentrate on what I'm implementing. So if speech and OT doesn't work, then I may have to find a different job. I mean, I don't want to, but if I can't do it, I can't do it. You know, there's not much I can do as far as that goes. So right now, just kind of hoping for the best and hoping that my brain will kick back in and start doing what it's supposed to do. But my voice is about to go out completely, so I'm going to go ahead and end this. Thank you, pod people, for listening and tuning in to the third part of my stroke journey. And I'm sure I'll have more updates later on down the road, but just remember, if you suspect someone or yourself is having a stroke, get to the hospital immediately. Call 911. Don't fucking wait a week like I did. I mean, seriously, it's a wonder I'm not dead. It's truly a miracle that I am not dead right now. So don't be like me and don't be stupid. Get to the hospital. Even if you're not 100% sure, like I said, it's better to be safe than sorry. So just really pay attention and take care of yourself. Get your blood pressure under control. Get your blood sugar under control and your cholesterol. It's very important. I know people harp on being healthy, but it's kind of a necessity because poor health can lead to strokes. And mental health can play a part in that too. And I had a problem with depression previously. So again, mental health is something that's not talked about nearly enough. If you're suffering from depression or anxiety or whatever the case may be, don't be afraid or don't be too proud to reach out for help. Even if it's not professional, just talk to somebody, you know, because even talking to somebody who's not necessarily a therapist or whatnot can help relieve some of the depression and anxiety. So don't be afraid and don't think it makes you weak to be able to reach out to people for help, because it doesn't. And I wish I had done that, because maybe I wouldn't be in the situation I'm in right now currently. Because I tell you what, I would not wish a stroke on anybody, not even my worst enemy, because it is traumatic and it's hard and it's a lonely experience. So just take care of yourself. And thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time.